This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for the LGBTI community, taking you around the globe, one country at a time. A big thank you to the Informer team and Richard for bringing us the latest local news. On Worldwide Wave panel tonight, we have Alex, Paul, and myself, Damien.
Salamat malam, which is good evening in Bahasa.
Now, tonight is a very special show as it will be our last broadcast before we go on a little holiday, returning to Joy Airwaves Next Grid in early December. Now, before we do that, we're going to explore life in a tiny sovereign state. It's a place you've likely heard of but can't quite place. Sharia law rules and LGBTIQ rights are virtually unheard of. Ruled by a sultan, tonight we're off to Brunei.
How does one remain true to themselves while observing their religion?
What spurred an Aussie gay man to champion LGBTI rights in Brunei?
And how does Brunei respond to those who ruffle the feathers? To shine a light on daily life in the sovereign state of Brunei, we speak with Karul, a young Muslim gay man living in Brunei.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Kicking off, we're in Israel, where...
Hi, I am Tim.
And I'm Ben.
From Hallam, Melbourne.
And you are listening to the Worldwide Wave
on Joy 94.9.
I wanna dance.
Clock strikes upon the hour and the sun begins to fade. Still enough time to figure out how to chase my blues away. I've done all right up till now. It's the light of day that shows me how. And when
just want to dance with somebody. Apparently, that's what the Glee cast wanted to do as well.
You can't. You're on radio. You're on the worldwide wave on Joy 94.9.
Well, then it's a perfect time to dance because no one can see you.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. We'll allow it, but not while you're on mic. So, we've already had a few messages in from our dedicated listeners. 317 says, "Hey team, thank you for always being informative and highlighting the importance of human rights in our rainbow community. Your interviews have opened my mind to a wealth of expertise from empathetic and highly dedicated individuals. Your song choices have always been fun." See, Paul, it's true. As Dr. Maya Angelou says, "We have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man, child, and woman can live freely. Have a well-deserved break and don't indulge in too much cheeky fun. We want you back safe and sound." Thank you, 317. It's always a pleasure hearing from you. If you want to join in the conversation, you can send us an email onair@joy.org.au or you can text us in on 0427-JOY-949 or give us a bell on 1300-JOY-949. Now, our resident executive producer, Matt, has chimed in from abroad and said, "Although I took off on my break a fraction early, I'm sending my best wishes to all our listeners and the Worldwide Wave team family. So many countries covered in 7 years on air. So many more to come when we return. What a team. Enjoy the break." Thanks so much, Matt.
Chumrip Sua from Cambodia. I'm very jealous. I do love Cambodia, although rather shocking story last night on Four Corners, if everyone saw that. Very sad news from Cambodia election. Anyway, but lovely place. Jealous.
If you've got a suggestion of where we should go for our holiday on Worldwide Wave, or alternatively, countries that you'd like to hear us cover that you have not yet heard of, let us know. You're listening to the Worldwide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
And we're starting off here with our first fact from Brunei is, well, these are not a lot of these are fun, I've got to say, but anyway, we'll get started. So the first one is Outright Action International has described Brunei as the country that has the most worrisome state of LGBT rights in Southeast Asia.
Prior to 2014, homosexuality was illegal and punishable by up to 10 years jail, regardless of whether it done in private and whether it was consensual. In 2014, Brunei announced it would impose Sharia law, in which homosexuality is punishable by no less than death by stoning.
In 2015, a civil servant was fined $1,000 Brunei for cross-dressing.
And in 2015, in the same year, the Brunei Project was established, and this is where it gets a little bit more positive. This was set up to seek promotion of human rights, religious freedom, free speech, and LGBT rights. And in 2016, they organised Brunei's first Idahot Day, International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia.
And also in 2016, the Brunei Project joined with more than 150 other organisations and individuals to endorse a joint statement on the deteriorating situation of LGBTIQ rights in Indonesia.
And we are also talking to Matthew from the Brunei Project tonight.
So stay tuned.
Share your views with the world. SMS us now on 0427-JOY-949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
What better way to gain an understanding of real-world life for LGBTIQ persons living in the sovereign state of Brunei than to speak to a local? We were fortunate enough to secure an interview with Karul, a young Muslim gay man living in Brunei, whose name we've changed to protect his privacy. We begin by asking Karul, for someone that is gay in Brunei, if you are found out by either family, friends or work, what happens?
Usually, well, in comes to terms in my situation, it's mostly regarding my family and friends. And I think what will happen Well, generally, most families would be in disgrace, especially mine. My family is not one of those people who likes gays. Actually, they despise them, bluntly.
So when you say that, Carol, what do they say or what do they do that leads you to say that?
It's probably because... Well, I'm not so sure myself in that situation. It's just that it's how I've been raised. They taught me that being gay is something of a sin in our religion, and that's something that I still kind of have... That still is lingering in my thoughts. It's probably something that I won't forget. It's kind of painful in some way.
Do you have anyone that you can turn to talk about how you feel?
To an extent, I do have a few friends that knows that I am gay. And surely enough, there are professors, lecturers that I've met along the way in my life in college that are accepting of the gay community, especially in Brunei, because there's not a lot of people here who are open and willing to be themselves and the society itself being accepting to who we are.
From a society viewpoint, does that come through in is that a threat of violence? Is that discrimination?
Violence is not something that I've seen most of the time. Sure, it may come from as a means of punishment. However, discrimination is there in that situation. I have been discriminated a few times before in college for being gay. I have had those people who are in disgust of what I like or for who I am, but so far I've never met any kinds of violence yet, like physical violence.
And that was Karul, a young Muslim gay man living in Brunei, speaking to us from Brunei. Coming up, we hear how an Aussie was compelled to act after learning the plight of rainbow people in Brunei. This is Worldwide Wave.
This is Tiseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch South Africa office on the Worldwide Wave.
Indeed, you are listening to our last show before we take a little break before returning next grid. Just following up from our wrap, we've had 317 come back with, it's about time we clean up our act with our community, with our unconscious biases. Well done to Kinder Grinder. Love it. And also Matt has chimed in and rather enjoyed Fluffy Scruffy. And read the Finnish military story, the defence forces are there to protect all citizens, not just a select few. Great to see them being visible in their support. Thank you, Matt.
Although it was Sweden, Matt, not Finland. But, you know, hey, Scandinavia, it's all the same.
It's up there. If you want to be part of the last episode of Worldwide Wave for this grid, you can SMS us on 0427JOY949. Tell us where to go in a nice place. So, you know, maybe use a country to do that. Call us 1300JOY949 or email us onair@joy.org.au.
Now, as we've discovered time and time again on Worldwide Wave, religion and rainbows don't often mix very well. And yet there are people all over the world who find themselves having to juggle their religion and their sexuality in their daily lives. We asked Karu how he strikes a balance between his sexuality and his religion.
Well, for me personally, I'm not saying this for everyone else in general, I'm not really a religious person per se. I try to balance out through appearance, like showing that I am still a Muslim. However, from what I've gone through, I've been a little bit less religious than I used to be when I was younger. Sure, people see me as being more being religious, and they know that I'm gay. My friends, they can see me being religious, they can see me being gay. It's kind of how I balance it is just through appearance of itself and trying not to get caught by my parents. Okay. Or my family.
So you're sort of projecting the appearance of religious normality, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just act like any other Muslim.
Fair enough. Because I've seen in your text that you say that that's the role of religion plays a major part in your family's rejection of homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And would that be a normal, would you describe that as a normal scenario in Brunei?
I would say yes. In our current time, most parents are very skeptical and they're not really okay with kids being, well, their children being gay and all. It's just that it's because of how they were raised when they were younger. It's because they were raised through religion, and we were raised not, and in our generation, we were raised not only by religion, but also through the internet as well. And in that case, it was a little bit different for us to become more understanding, whereas parents can be a little bit more protective.
You did, Carol, though, give us a bit of a hint that at university there was more openness and more acceptance. Do you have a sense that perhaps younger generations are more accepting of sexuality?
Yes, I very much agree on that statement. And I have met the people, even the people who are younger than me, understood about being gay or not being gay, being open or not. The people I've met in college and university, it seems like they're just more open-minded. They're more friendly now, to us.
Matthew, if we could just turn to you, because you're an Australian, how did you get involved in Brunei?
Well, it was very, very unexpected, to say the least. Previously, I had never been involved in any type of human rights advocacy or activism or anything like that. And to be honest, I had never given a lot of thought to the idea of human rights or how people in other parts of the world were being denied the same rights and freedoms that I was lucky enough to enjoy. But that all changed on the 1st of May 2014. I was sitting at home scrolling through my newsfeed, and I came across this story about Brunei and how on that very day they were implementing Sharia law. The Western media, being sort of the Western media, sensationalised the parts that were the most horrifying of Sharia law, which was in regards to how, under the new laws, gay men could be stoned to death. As a gay man myself, I was horrified that someone in Brunei, just an ordinary person like myself, could face such a terrible and unjustifiable fate. So at that point, I was sort of spurred into action, getting involved with raising awareness about Brunei. And then 1 year later, I formed the Brunei Project, which is what I'm working on now.
And what exactly does that project involve?
The Brunei Project is primarily a social media-based initiative that aims to provide a platform for promotion of a broad range of human rights issues within Brunei. We particularly work in the absence of any active human rights advocacy groups within Brunei. We do work quite a lot collaboratively with other human rights organisations located within the region and internationally. For example, in 2016, we held Brunei's first ever International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia and Transphobia. It was the very first event of that kind in Brunei. And also, we've also been working collaboratively over the last couple of years with a Japanese NGO called Peace Boat, where each year we give young Bruneians the opportunity to participate in Peace Boat's Global University, which allows them the opportunity to engage with young people from across Asia on a range of social development and human rights related issues. So as a very small and independent entity, the Brunei Project does rely a lot on working collaboratively with other like-minded organisations where we can draw from their skills and experience and learn and hopefully progress in what we are doing.
Carol, if I could ask you, is social media an outlet, a safe space for gay people to find other gay people?
Social media is a little bit scary at first when it comes, because for me, myself, and experience, I used to be afraid, like, if I were to find a website where I could talk to other gay people? Will I get caught? Will I be in trouble? I was scared at first, but yes, I've met a lot of gay people from Brunei through social media, and so far it seems to be a safe area for us to talk to each other and to understand how we lived our lives in this country.
And Matthew, how do you reach people? How would somebody who is LGBT find out about the Brunei Project?
Social media remains our primary method of engagement with people in Brunei. I mean, there have been recent studies that show that social media usage in Brunei is greater than anywhere else in Southeast Asia. So we rely a lot on, we focus a lot on the use of social media for reaching out to people and for engaging with the LGBT community and other people in Brunei. We do face a significant challenge in actually forming a real connection with the people that we are able to reach out to. Well, there is a lot of support for the messages that we're putting out there and what we are advocating. We do find that there's a real reluctance to actively get involved with the work we are doing and to become really engaged with advocacy themselves.
And that was Karul, a young Muslim man living in Brunei, and Matthew Wolf from the Brunei Project speaking to us from Brunei. This is World Wide Wave.
You can check out more on the Brunei Project by going to facebook.com/the Brunei Project. Now, it's interesting because we've had kind of the perspective of a local kind of having to live, breathe and in a way survive in that environment, and then a foreigner who kind of was spurred into action by just reflecting on how lucky he is to be in a country that is so much more liberal, and the fact that, you know, like,
you can't get much more unliberal than death penalty for homosexuality.
Exactly. And I think perhaps, you know, Matthew mentioned in there that the media, you know, does a great job of sensationalizing stuff. But I think in a way that was almost a positive, because perhaps it's what helped spur him into action to actually try and you know, make a change for the better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's the case, and it's no surprise in a way that Brunei, because I know from my own contacts with Indonesian teachers and other teachers in international schools, Brunei's got a very big expat population. So it's one of these sort of oil-rich nations that has a lot of trying to attract a lot of expats there under very good working conditions or salary conditions. So
unless you're part of the rainbow.
Sure.
But and it's, then you know, you'd be given it a second kind of think, I think.
Yeah, well, anyway, there are echoes here of the United Arab Emirates and Dubai, and, you know, maybe there will be some pressure from that community, but it would be a long process. But it sounds like, you know, with Brunei, it's one step forward, two steps back, a little bit like Indonesia on these issues.
Mm. One of the things that Karul highlighted was the response from his parents. So parents in any LGBTIQ situation can generally either take on a supportive role where they welcome and support the individual, or, you know, they can kind of stick to their traditional values, I suppose you would call it, and, you know, reinforce whatever the, you know, the common society says is acceptable. So,
well, as Karul said, that his parents have been brought up to think that way. They don't have any other, they don't have anything else to change their
to
ideas.
To inform them, that's just what they've got. And
it's a continuing message as well, so it's being reinforced.
It's just, I guess as a parent, you'd come to a crossroads where you've either got to pick whether you choose to rethink it, or if you just kind of stick to what you know, but then you're essentially abandoning, you know, your loved one. So it's a hard call, but yeah.
Karul is in a very difficult position because he can't come out to his family because he expects to be...
Well, he knows what he'll get.
Yeah.
So it's quite the tricky one. But, you know, on the positive side, they, you know, managed to have an Eye to Hobbit Day in 2016. So I think for a country or a nation such as Brunei that is quite anti-LGBTIQ, having an Eye to Hobbit Day, you know, that's quite an achievement in and of itself.
I mean, I've travelled reasonably extensively in Indonesia, and I see all these three countries, Malaysia, Indonesia and Brunei, having a very similar thing in common, which is this: the religion has imposed this sort of strict view, and it's even been worsened through greater context with the Middle East, and a lot of investment in their religious infrastructure and education. However, underneath that, I don't find that Indonesians in particular, the country I've had the greatest contact with in that area, have a naturally homophobic bent. I think they're actually naturally quite accepting.
I think humans are naturally quite accepting until, you know, everyone's born a pretty blank slate until you're given them.
Yeah. You know. And the homophobia sort of seems to come in waves in that region when there's new waves of religious zealotry that's sort of imposed. So I do have some hope that these countries will sort of naturally just open and diversify over time.
And Matt has chimed in and said, I wonder if the increased acceptance at university shows a more accepting younger generation or a more accepting educated generation. I wonder if young undereducated people would be the same or influenced by views of their parents' generation.
Yeah, I think there's
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely reinforcing the role of, I guess, of parents and also of education. And, you know, it can result in it going either way, really.
Yeah, yeah. But greater internationalisation will, I think, see that a new generation come through the ranks that's more accepting, travelled and worldly on these issues. It's my hope.
Hope for us all. Mm. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9, where we're off to Brunei.
This is Otan Batar from LGBT Centre of Mongolia, and I'm happy to be on World Wide Wave.
In a different place, never picked to play or run the race. How's a kid like me to know what I could have been, what I could have been then? I was always told just what to say, what clothes to wear, what games to play. How's a kid like me to know what I could have been, what I could have been now?
And that was Anthony Kalia with I Don't Care What You Say.
But that's not true. We do care what you say here on Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9, especially since it's our last show before we take a little bit of a holiday, returning next grid in early December. 317 has written in with a suggestion that we go to Greece because they need as much support as possible in lieu of the horrific fires, and they're beautiful people with a warm heart. Thank you, 317. 317 also asked us, what individual or interview has left a lasting impression on us and why?
Oh, it's easy for me. That's the one we did with Bissy...
Alimi?
Alimi, yes. Just the sheer enjoyment of life that he had.
And
from such a hard... I mean, he was from Nigeria, came out on national TV, got the sack... Got the TV program got cancelled.
Yeah, it was definitely a high profile. Everything was at stake. Mm. You know, had a successful career on television, and kind of had to dump that. Had to leave the country because of the way that LGBTIQ people are treated there. Where he fled to the UK, but. Yeah, I think that's one thing that came across was just that energy, and despite all that, you know, he eradicated in the UK, he got married.
He announced his engagement on our programme, although we weren't allowed to say anything.
Yeah, it was almost a Joy exclusive.
Now, I would say my favourite is from this year was, and I've got it, and my apologies for forgetting his name, but was the Pakistani documentary filmmaker, Pakistani-Canadian, who made that film that was at McQuiff this year. And it was about his, a bit of an ode to his father, a very poignant documentary. About his life migrating to the family's life and his father's conservative return and then final embrace of his son's sexuality. It was a very moving interview and film.
Well, we're going to turn to our last bit of the interview. So campaigning for change is always hard, and campaigning for LGBT rights in a Muslim country is definitely a challenge. Doing so as a foreigner has its risks and its advantages. So we asked Matthew from the Brunei Project how his interactions with local officials and authorities have gone.
Unfortunately, not particularly positive. Unfortunately, human rights is something that's not particularly viewed, I guess, favourably in Brunei. There's a lot of belief that it is a Western concept and that it doesn't have the same applicability in Brunei, which is a common theme in other parts of Southeast Asia as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it hasn't been entirely positive. Unfortunately, since we did hold the first event to mark the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia in 2016, I have actually unfortunately been banned from entering Brunei. Our response from the authorities there hasn't been entirely positive. So.
Matt, do you wear that ban as a badge of honour?
No, I wouldn't say that. Although I did have someone comment to me once when I told them that story that it's a good sign that my message is getting noticed, or the message of the Brunei Project is getting noticed. So, yes, but I wouldn't say no, it's a badge of honour.
Carol, perhaps the last word to you. What do you see as the future for LGBT people in Brunei?
I, for one, don't see a bright future, in my opinion, if we don't do any sort of actions that can help the LGBT community. For one, that I've experienced in that is most of us are in hiding, and most of us are still scared of what will happen next, and most of them don't know what to do while hiding, and we're basically sitting ducks in the situation until either someone comes to help us or the government starts to do something about it.
It's a very enlightening story for us here in Australia. Carol speaking to us from Brunei, and Matt from here in Australia from the Brunei Project. Thank you very much for sharing your views on World Wide Wave.
Thank you for having us, guys. It's been great talking.
Thank you.
And Matt has just chimed in and said that Arshad Khan was the Pakistani-Canadian filmmaker.
That's right, yes. That was a great film.
And his personal favourites recent of World Wide Wave episodes was Orlando's Pulse Nightclub interview, which was just so raw. I do remember that, and it was a time of real high emotion, like both here at the Joy Studios and also when you listen to the interview, it was just so honest. So raw is just a great word, you know. It was describing exactly what was going on and how the community was responding and that was part of, I guess, the grieving process, was just putting it out there. And you know, that was great that we could bring that to the LGBTIQ.
I enjoyed the follow-up. Enjoyed probably the wrong word, but appreciate
it's all in context, you know. Yeah. World Wide Wave doesn't have a lot of things that you will generally enjoy unless you're sadistic.
But the follow-up programs, because we went back a year later and talked to the interviewee again,
mm-hmm.
and it was a positive message that came out of that.
Yeah, a much lighter one that Matt has named was the UK professor, which did a study on how gays have influenced fashion. So, you know, that was a bit more light and definitely still interesting. And Matt says that although he hesitates to tell us that he's been sitting in the pool, drink in hand, nibbling on crispy beef and lime leaf. Sorry, I can't share. Thanks, Matt. He does go on to say, well done, gang. Good show and great music too. And thanks to Paul for always digging into the musical Pandora box and getting songs and tunes that kind of line up with the theme of the day. Except today, I think he's gone a bit rogue and he's...
I'm just putting on what I like. Also, given the subject of the interview, it's uplifting music.
Well, there you go. And 317 has chimed in and said, the most interesting for me was the gay Trump supporter. It was weird and wacky.
Oh, yes, yes, I agree.
That it was.
Yes, it was indeed.
Joy's sponsor.
Hi, this is Dr. Joseph Goh from Monash University, Malaysia, on the World Wide Wave.
Now, you wouldn't believe it, but that's another episode of World Wide Wave wrapping up on Joy 94.9. And this week is a little special because it's our last episode. We're taking a break next grid, but we will be returning in December. Now, in the meantime, if you do have cravings that you need to get met, you can go to joy.org.au/worldwidewave and listen to the ton of episodes we have on podcast.
Thanks to me.
Thanks to Alex. Also, thanks to Karul from Brunei and to Matthew Wolf from the Brunei Project. You can check out his work at facebook.com/the Brunei Project.
We'd like to thank everyone that interacted with us on Facebook. That's W3Joy. We're very easy to find on there.
And graciously, Dean, our foreign correspondent and social media extraordinaire, we will continue updating the W3Joy Facebook page whilst we're having a little break. Thanks to all who have SMS or emailed us tonight, and for Neil for being on the front desk.
And we have Urban Dreaming coming up, but some music to take us out. This one is Loreen. I've got to get my Eurovision in there somehow.
Yeah.
We have the power.
Now, next week, World Wide Wave will be replaced by What Happens If, a lifestyle show that literally asks the question, what happens if, hosted by Daniel. He'll connect with community leaders and industry professionals to explore everyday scenarios and find answers to those questions.
Interesting.
For now, that's World Wide Wave signing out.
See you in the summer.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online across the world at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.